I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. On today's show, I'll speak with nutritionist, chef, and author Maria Ibrahim. Maria is also known as the Fit Foodie and has written a cookbook called Eat Like You Give a Fork, The Real Dish on Eating to Thrive. In the book, she shares recipe ideas and stresses the importance of retaining your taste buds for the sake of health and overall enjoyment. Maria shares how she gained inspiration from watching PBS as a child, one of the only channels she was allowed to watch. And we talk a lot about food. And I even spill the beans of some of the foods that I will not eat. Welcome to Lifestyles.
Thank you so much, Lillian.
Looking at your book, it's very different, but I wanted to start at the beginning. Your scientific father thought television was a complete waste of time. And as a little girl, you had access to three TV channels. The only one he kind of approved of was PBS. What did he like about PBS?
Well, it was about education. Being a scientist, he didn't want to fill my mind with junk food, so to speak. That's how I became very good friends with Julia Child, at least from afar.
Watching PBS and her show that Julia Child became your mentor, tell me about that. You quote her in your book, in your acknowledgments, where she says, "Remember, no one more important than people." In other words, friendship is the most important thing, not career or housework or one's fatigue, and it needs to be nurtured. Tell me about you and Julia Child.
You know, I learned a lot from Julia because I saw in her this very carefree, adventurous individual. And if you read her memoir, you'll know that she was really groundbreaking in so many different things as a woman in the culinary world, on television, and her beautiful love affair with not only her husband, but food. I just really adored her, I guess, unpolished nature. I just thought she was so interesting and quirky. And that was what was so endearing, was it wasn't about perfection, but it was about enthusiasm. I really take that to heart. And I live by that mantra that people are the most important thing. And we gather people around the table and we get a lot of pleasure out of feeding them, at least I do. But it's not about the food as much, which I know might sound a little bit funny. Yes, the food is important, but the gathering is really where the heart is.
In your book, you stated, food has the power to take our emotions to places we've never experienced. Tell me what you're talking about there.
You know, I've had the good fortune of traveling around the world. I studied in France. I went to cooking school and I studied in Italy. And what I have found, just also being Egyptian, born and raised with Egyptian family, parents, and being born there, is there is something very special about what food does. Not only does it contribute to literally our DNA and become the fabric of who we are as human beings, but the potential for it to bring people together, to break borders, and breaking bread together is pretty tremendous. And I think part of it that is nourishing, comforting, and soothing to the soul. So if there is any division or feeling of maybe like not feeling quite fitting in, or maybe there's just a little bump, I know in my family, we have seven people. If something's going on, that's where we talk about it. And so that's why I feel like food has the power to do so many things. It can literally transcend time and take you to a different place of your memories, your childhood, and it can take you on an adventure, or it can just bring you a lot of comfort. I think it's pretty tremendous. And it's the only art form you can experience with every single sense.
I am not a foodie. I am not definitely a fit foodie. And I'm not great in the kitchen. And I know how to make about seven dishes. So fortunately, there's only 7 days a week, so I'm good. I have my...
You're down for the week.
Yes. I have my two items that I take to barbecues. Well, in normal times when we were going to barbecues and stuff, I have my two items that I feel confident in taking as my dish to take to a potluck or such. And that's it. So going through your book, I saw so many foods. And I don't like to eat a lot of foods. So
okay.
I could be your biggest challenge because I'm very picky. There's so many things I don't eat So when I'm dieting, I'm always on salads, and they get so, I get so tired of them. So for about 3 months, I took a break from salads, but oh, did I gain weight? Because I wanted to eat the pastas, and I wanted to eat my carbs, and I wanted to eat tacos and all the different foods that I love. I want to ask this next question. How did you figure out how to help people avoid getting stuck in guilt frustration? Because that's where I've been lately, because I've been eating all the foods I want to eat, but they're not all the foods I should be eating.
Well, you know, I think, Lillian, we have to give ourselves a little bit of grace, especially during these times where things are just so uncertain. Like I said, food can transcend a lot of situations. Truthfully, sometimes it's where we need to lean into for a sense of stability and comfort. But what I will say is retraining your taste buds and acclimating them to crave what is actually best for your body is a really important step. So if people are stuck in their cravings for sugar and processed food and high salt, then that's what they're going to lean into every single time. Mm-hmm. And when we crave carbs excessively, it could mean that we are not getting enough balanced nutrition. We're not getting enough protein and fat because, you know, carbs are quick energy and our body sometimes needs just something quickly to power us up. So what I would say is let's take a look at what you do like and go back to that and create some framework, because the truth is, as I mentioned in the book, you can eat whatever the fork you want 10% of the time, but 90% of the time, I want you to focus on what is actually building you up to thrive. And that means getting your full range of essential amino acids and your proteins. You're getting good low-burning carbohydrates. You can still have carbs. It's just type of carbs. Maybe instead of traditional pasta, maybe it's brown rice pasta or quinoa pasta, for example. You know, maybe you're not getting enough essential fatty acids from, you know, nice fatty seafood, for example, or flax or chia. And by balancing those out, having that macronutrient balance will fuel you up and keep you satiated and sustained. And at the same time, help to feed every system in your body so that you will feel more satisfied. Oftentimes we lean into certain things because of an emotional state.
Sure.
And if we can set that aside for a second, doesn't mean that you can never go back to it, but just reposition our framework and get our mindset in a slightly different place.
Let me reintroduce my guest is nutritionist, chef, and author, Maria Ibrahim. The name of your book is Eat Like You Give a Fork, which is very clever, very cute. And while I was looking through it, I was thinking, you know, and you just touched upon it, retraining your taste buds. I tell you, my taste buds are pretty set in their ways. So the thought of retraining them just seems impossible. And if I told you all the foods I don't eat, you would just, I mean, you could name so many different dishes and I'd say, I don't eat that. I don't eat that. I don't eat that. And I would frustrate the heck out of you. I'm just telling you right now.
Well, I've had a lot of picky eaters that I've worked with. And the truth is we do get set in our ways because we've programmed our minds too. Our food choices are in part dictated by our brains. So we know what we like. Listen, if I could eat with abandon, I would walk into a bakery and just raid it, right? I love anything baked, any bread, any muffins, you know, all of those things. But my body does not like those foods. So I know that I'm going to be in pain or in discomfort or some state of distress if I do that. I would say, first of all, and I encourage people to do this, get a food log and start jotting down how you feel after certain meals. And if you go through my reset, there are certain things that I ask you to cut out for those 8 days while we really dive into this. I want you to cut out processed sugars, any sweetener that's caloric, even honey or maple syrup. I know they're natural, but I want you to pull those out for just a moment because they do affect how you taste. I want you to cut out dairy for that period, and I want you to cut out any processed foods and alcohol and a few other things.
Oh, forget it. You want me to cut out alcohol too? Oh,
just
my gosh.
Lily, you can do it for 8 days. We can do this together. 8 days is all I ask for. Hey, the world was created in 7, so I just need 8. But here's what ends up happening that's so interesting, is when you start focusing on foods that build your palate, like sour foods and umami foods and bitter foods. Those are the foods that dictate good health. And so what ends up happening is you retrain what you crave. Imagine if I told you that you could crave broccoli over brownies.
But I would do that because I like broccoli and sweets are not my thing. So give me another one. Give me another one.
So you told me you were a difficult eater.
I am.
I'm saying you're not that difficult.
Yes. I mean, I don't eat anything that comes out of the sea, under the water. I don't eat anything that has a beak or that flies.
Not a problem.
Okay. That leaves me with red meat.
Okay.
And salads.
Will you eat tempeh?
What is it?
Fermented soybean, like a tofu, but it's got a lot more flavor.
Nope.
I bet if I showed you how to make it, you might enjoy it, especially when it's seasoned the right way. See, and here is the thing. What happens with children, especially as they are between the ages of 3 and 5, there's something called neophobia. And we all go through it. We go through this fear of food. We get set in our ways.
Yep.
As early as 5 years old. And if you grew up eating big sugary breakfast, cereal and pancakes and muffins and all of that, that's probably how you like to eat now, unless you allowed yourself to try different things. But we literally have a fear of new things. So as adults, we have a little bit more rationale. And what I say to people is you have to kind of keep your eye on the prize. What are your big goals? Is your goal to feel better in your skin, to maybe have your clothes fit a little bit better, to have the energy to keep up with your grandchildren, to know that you are well enough to travel and feel like you won't get sick? Do you want to run a marathon? You know, what is your BHAG, that big, hairy, audacious goal that you want to reach? Or maybe it's just a little goal, and have that be your dashboard every single day when you make your decisions. Because the truth is, we're omnivores. We can make choices, and not anybody is going to tell us, hey, you shouldn't eat that, or probably not. So we have to put that on ourselves and decide what is more important to us. Is it reaching our goals, or is it maybe paying for it later on? But I will tell you, the way is delicious. You just have to be open.
So I think it's keeping your mind open, and mine is very closed. If I had to choose between broccoli and French fries, I would rather go with French fries, but I'm going to go with broccoli. But not every time. I really do believe I don't want the listeners to know how terrible I am, so I'm not going to go through everything. But if we were off the air and we were talking about my diet, you would just, you would be just, maybe not. You've probably talked to so many people.
You know, not everybody is going to come to the table with, you know, open arms. And I get that. That's so common. And even sometimes it's the spouse. Sometimes it's the spouse that's super resistant and the person wants to make change and the spouse doesn't want to make change. So I get all the challenges. I've worked with lots of people who had different things come up like that. And I think once you bring people into the process and they have a hand in it and they understand what the food is doing for them, it really makes a difference.
I don't know. I'm going to try some of the things and just check it out. But like, you know, I'm set in my ways. I like a certain taste. I like my salt. Like I said, I don't like seafood. And I know it's psychological, but I don't like the smell of fish. I don't like the texture.
Yeah. And if I may, and I'm not like pointing out anything, but oftentimes it's how things are prepared. You know, fish should not smell fishy.
Right.
If it does, it means it's not fresh or it hasn't been prepared properly.
Sure, right, yeah.
You know, if the texture is off and it's not agreeing with you, what I've found is there are just some things that work and some things that don't, whether you're a picky eater or not. And I personally don't love preparation certain ways and I avoid them. You know, it's okay. It's okay not to like something. It's just finding the way that you do like it. And then when you do find that, then you repeat it.
After a quick break, Maria will share why she wrote the book. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with nutritionist, chef, and author Maria Ibrahim. So you wrote the book, Eat Like You Give a Fork. Why did you write the book?
Well, the subtitle is The Real Dish on Eating to Thrive. And I really feel like this is the position that I come to food from. And I'll share with you a little personal story. I suffered from an eating disorder for 10 years. And I lived with it. I pushed it down. It was awful, you know. I never felt more low and more unsatisfied in my life. And I was trying to control my life through what I put in my mouth. And I thought that eating the least amount of food was the way to happiness. And what I didn't realize is that I was completely robbing myself of my potential to be the best version of me. I look back on, and it haunts me in a way, to think that I couldn't achieve my purpose because I was destroying myself. And there are a lot of modified eating disorders that we're seeing now. 1 in 8 people suffer from some form of eating disorder. It may not be that visible, but they may just be restricting themselves to the point of no return because they just don't know any better. We have so many people talking about food and diets and should you be paleo or keto or vegan or pegan or what's the answer? But if you really strip all of that away, there are certain things that we should be including. Rather than focusing on what to take out, I realized that I had to focus on what to keep in. And that's where shift happens for me. And that's where I've been able to take people to a new level. When you are feeding your body to the core, then you're thriving and you feel different. You feel happier. You feel like you can manage stressful situations better. You feel like you're getting better sleep. Your sex drive comes back. You are nicer to people. You know, all of those things that we strive to do, and then we get our personal goals involved, and then it's a whole nother level. So if we use food as a tool, not only to just satisfy the id factor in us that, oh, food tastes good, so I'm going to eat it. No, we think about what it's going to do for us in the long run, but we still enjoy it. We still romance it. We still savor it. I'll tell you, I could savor a bite of arugula with an heirloom tomato and some balsamic glaze like nobody's business. And it's all good for me, but I really enjoy it. And you can get to that point when you understand what it's doing for you.
I did see a salad in there that was very inviting. There was no lettuce. It was heirloom tomato, cucumbers, cheese that was quite appetizing for me. I want to talk about the process of writing a cookbook because this book feels more than just a cookbook with recipes. It has so much more details about kind of the things that you're talking about. Tell me what the process was like putting this book together and how long did it take you?
You know, I invented a line of products called Eat Cleaner. I got a patent. I did all of these great, beautiful things in my career. But my one bucket list that I really wanted to accomplish was to publish a book. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done. I wanted to be able to express what I'm expressing right now to you verbally in a book. So you'll find that it's like, it's me talking to you. It's very conversational. It was a compendium of literally 27 years in the food industry. I wanted to pick recipes that were not only delicious and easy to make, but that fit my philosophy of macronutrient balance. So they're highly curated. The verbiage that you read is just, it's me telling you what I've learned over 27 years of studying nutrition, culinary arts, and traveling the world, and just my own personal struggles. And then coaching others of what works and what doesn't. I think what doesn't work is beating yourself up. We have to have grace for ourselves and we have to have balance. And that's why the 90-10 rule is what I live by. If I want to eat the cake, I'm going to eat the cake. If I want to have a piece of grandma's apple pie, I'm going to do that. And I'm not going to feel guilty. We guilt food so much and then we guilt ourselves. But this process, and I worked, you know, with an amazing editor that really helped me to hone my voice. This is a very personal and very, I think, way beyond, like you said, Lillian, it's way beyond a cookbook. There are a lot of better chefs out there than me that could probably teach you how to do really complicated recipes. But what I can do is I can teach you how to eat and to eat well and to do it in a way that'll make you feel like, wow, I just unlocked a superpower. And I just turned 51 this year, and I can tell you, I probably feel better than I've ever felt.
So I just turned 60 this year. And, you know, when you talk about the goal, my goal is for my clothes to fit and to stay healthy for my children and grandchildren. So those are my goals. You know, if you're looking on the dashboard, that's what would be mine. So I get it. But the idea of craving the salts and crunchy is really a battle. But I saw some things in your book that are interesting. Like I said in the beginning of this interview, I am not a good cook. I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. But I am going to give a try to some of these because I love olives. I like mushrooms and some of the things that you have in there. And part of a cookbook.
The crunchy garbanzo beans. You got to try those.
I don't like garbanzo beans, but I did look at it.
Just give these a try because it transforms the texture. So one thing that's really important for everybody to understand is not only do we have this neophobia, but we can be very texture averse. I went through this with my kids. I would give them, my son, for example, can't give him cooked spinach, but I can give him raw spinach.
Yeah, okay? Me too. Yeah.
So it's a texture situation. And if I blend it into a smoothie, forget it. He doesn't even know what's in there. So find the texture that works for you. And you might not like the mushiness of a garbanzo bean, but make it crunchy and crispy with the right flavoring, and you might not even recognize it.
Now, I'm going to cave to that because you're right. And I have a son with autism, so textures are really important, right? So I get that.
Yeah.
And so garbanzo beans I don't like because they're mushy. But when I saw the picture, and that's what I want to bring up next, when I saw the picture, I'm like, maybe I could try that because it looks crunchy. And so what I want to talk about now is some of the pictures and the process. You make all the food and then you have a photographer. The process to write a cookbook with all the images must take a long time. You're not going to cook these all in a weekend by any means.
The writing of the book was kind of a process over a period of many, many years,
right,
almost 27 years, but really focused writing over 10 years. And I wasn't working on it all the time, but there were bits and pieces, you know, as I was training people and coaching them to see the results, too. I was a signature chef for the Daniel Plan. I still am. Worked with Dr. Mark Hyman and Dr. Daniel Amen and Dr. Rick Warren. And in that work, I really honed processes that worked for people. So all of these things take time and experience. And then the actual creation of the recipes also over a long period of time, honing them. And, you know, probably one of my biggest pet peeves is when people create recipes and they don't test them and you find them on the internet and they don't work. You know, you kind of gone all that effort and they just don't work. But my recipes are tested and proven and tweaked, and I feel proud of what I've put out there. And then photographing them, you know, over a period of a week, working, you know, 12-hour days, basically.
Wow.
Styling, creating. You know, there's no epoxy. There's no funny paint or anything. They're just natural. And we wanted to capture them like you would capture them in your own kitchen. They're not picture perfect. Some of them have a little mess on the spoon, a little
stuff. I liked that.
But that's how you would enjoy it in your own home.
Right.
It's not about Pinterest perfection. It's about real life.
So you make this food, and who's eating that food?
During the shoot?
Yeah.
Eating the food, for sure. You should have seen the refrigerator. It was one of the most amazing things I've actually captured it while we were doing behind-the-scenes photos. So much beautiful, fresh produce, and I have to thank Melissa's Produce for supplying us with the produce for the book. You know, it's not very meat-heavy. You probably noticed that.
I did.
And it's not that I'm not an omnivore. I am. I eat all kinds of things. But what I really wanted to focus on was how you combine nutrients. You'll see as you flip through there, it's pretty produce-heavy. I believe that whatever plan you follow, and I hope you follow mine, that it should be 50% of what you eat should be plant-based, at least, and lots of leafy greens, lots of raw food. Raw food is really important for our enzymes, to get enzymes and to balance our gut health. So there's a method to the madness for each one. It's not just a recipe created just because it tastes good. There's a lot of thought and balance that comes to those recipes, too.
My guest is nutritionist, chef, and author, Maria Ibrahim. She's written the book, Eat Like You Give a Fork. Now, this is Thanksgiving, and what will you suggest or what will you prepare for a Thanksgiving meal?
I always put out a Thanksgiving menu for our followers. Everybody can find that out at eatcleaner.com. but I like the basic. I'm Egyptian, so we didn't really grow up with Thanksgiving being part of like our family tradition. We kind of created a tradition. I really am a believer that you got to brine the turkey. You got to let it marinate in that lovely brine for at least, you know, a couple of days. Huh. So there are certain things that I convey, but we switch it up every year. There's different spices that we use. There's always a mac and cheese because my son has to have mac and cheese at Thanksgiving. I'm a big fan of the butternut squash mac and cheese, and I use some Greek yogurt in there. And if you're dairy-free, you can use dairy-free cheese. But it's a winner, and everybody loves it, no matter what point of view they come from on dairy. Got to have some green beans in there. You know, I really like the basics. I like the traditional dishes. I just try and make them cleaner. And try and eliminate some of the saturated fat that doesn't really serve us and swap that out. I was on a show called Recipe Rehab. It was on ABC. And we took family recipes and made them better. And one of the recipes that I did was an apple pie. And I took the family's recipe that had like some crazy number. I think it was like 90 grams of sugar, 100 grams of, it was like outrageous numbers, and made it better. It was the only recipe that got a perfect score on the show. I took out all the fat that was in the crust. I used some slightly sweeter apples so you don't have to add a lot of sugar. I used oats to make it heart healthy. And the family loved it. And they told me that they were going to replace their traditional apple pie with this recipe because it got a perfect score. So I'm just saying, give it a chance. You may have some family recipes that you love that just need a little doctoring. There are smart swaps for everything.
Maria, thank you so much for your time, your information about food, and your enthusiasm.
Thank you.
To learn more about Maria Ibrahim, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. If you have a topic or an idea for a segment, leave me a message at our website, kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend, and bye for now. Yeah, the simple.